of all the years that I grew up in Quakertown, I never once went to the Pearl Buck House. I drove by it a million times driving down 113. Never once stopped. Never once even drove. Never once stopped to
113
visit.
Or 313.
That's 313. You're right. Yes. I've been in
I'm schooling you on Pennsylvania. Yes.
I've been in Tennessee for almost 10 years now.
Right. Yeah, 313.
Yeah, I lived right off of 313.
Swamp Road. That's where I lived, on Swamp Road.
Never a more aptly named road, actually. Yes. Quakertown is swamp land.
Road. Well, yeah, but I was on Dogwood Lane, so it's much nicer than Swamp Road. Yeah. But I was partial to Lee's Hoagie House up in Quakertown. So.
That's right there on 309. That's right by our the movie theater that I met Steve at. We worked at that theater.
And what, were you ushers at the theater?
We were. We probably kicked you out at least once or twice. You look like someone we would have kicked down the early 90s.
I went to the Barn Cinema in Doylestown.
Oh,
in
D-Sound. Yeah.
I was at the Barn on the last night it was open.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I remember going to see Rosewood with Ving Rhames about a revolt. Not the New Jersey Made of One, but it was similar to Made of One. But it was a movie that Ving Rhames is in, and I was there the last night the Barn was open, and then like a couple weeks later, tore it down.
This is instilling in me a Bucks County pride I didn't know I had. Until now.
Yeah.
Well, then there you are.
Yeah. I worked so hard to escape it, and now I want to go back.
Well, you're only
from Muhlenberg, which is where I did my first college concert. I was maybe 19 or 20 or something, and I did a concert at Muhlenberg with a friend of mine. Yeah.
All right. Well, Doug, I'm already recording, so we can.
I'm done.
That's all you get. That's the gold. If for those who haven't figured it out yet, we are Steve and I are sitting here talking to pretty much a local boy for us, Doug Katsaros. As Tick fans, we all know Doug from his fantastic work as the composer for the Tick theme, and I'm assuming the majority of the music throughout the series?
The entirety of the music throughout the series, and the vocals on the theme.
Oh, so you were like, da-da-da-da-da.
Dub-dwee-dub-dub-dub-dwee-dow.
So, Doug...
That came about because I wanted it to be bass trombones. Ben Edlund and some executives at Fox and I were on a conference call. And they said, well, explain to us the theme. And I said, well, I was thinking I have a bunch of bass trombones, you know, with the Gene Krupa. And then they come in. And the executive said, well, that's funny. Why don't you just sing it like that? And I went, well, there are probably residuals off of that. I can go with that. So I did.
Right on.
Basically, audio doodle became the final product, huh?
Exactly right.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's amazing.
Well, let's pull it back a little bit and let's introduce everybody. The first thing I want to say is you're our first interview for the podcast. That actually, as we're recording this, our podcast actually hasn't even gone up online yet. Wow. We've already recorded one episode. But one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on first in terms of an interview is I always found that the music was what made that show unique initially. It really set the tone for the series, and even more so than the Big Blue superhero and Arthur and the weird villains and the setting of the city. I always thought the music was really what set that series apart. So that you're the main reason I wanted to, or you're the first person I wanted to talk to in terms of the behind the scenes.
The big band gone bad.
Yes. Solid. So, let's go back to the beginning. Now you
players, you know, I used some of the cats from the what was it? The John Belushi band.
The Blues
Brothers.
Oh yeah. Who was that? Lenny Pickett and people like that?
Well, no, we had Lou Marini played sax and flute, and Mr. Fabulous played trumpet, and you know, and then a great drummer, Dave Radicek, who's since passed. And yeah, there was, it got down to a core of about 7 or 8 people, but I think we did the theme with about 12 people. I mean, you know, we just hired a bunch of cats, you know, and played it, you know, did it right.
That's great.
That flute solo, which you can hear, especially in the closing credits, I don't know if you call that a redux or something, but that has always been an outstanding part in my mind.
That would be Lou. Lou
Marine. So now for a lot of people who listen to our other shows like Star Wars in Character, you'll know that we are all Quakertown natives. Now, Doug, you grew up in Bucks County down closer to Doylestown, which is the county seat.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about your formative years as best you can.
I was born in Long Island, New York, but when I was 4, we moved to Perkasie. But then they made our house a lake. They took
Lake Nockamixon, yeah.
It was a man-made lake, and it wasn't there before. And our house is where I lived is now the I think it's the park, you know, the welcome center or something like that.
You lived in that in the welcome center there, right off of what is that 563?
Yeah, yeah, EIEIO, 09090 was on the little thing. I remember that's how, in case we got lost, we said, well, we go to the sign where it says 09090, and my mom, you know, we were 4 and 5. And then we moved to the middle of, right around Buckingham, Doylestown, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. Very, very.
It's white area.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know. The houses were not so expensive. And we live on a little lane, and there were only like 7 houses on the lane, and it was very nice. And we were, you know, house number 6 or whatever. And now there's like, you know, 40 houses up there. It's like, you know, now it's a little posh. Yeah. But in trying to be in the woods, and of course they've knocked all the woods down to make all these houses, so there's not many woods there. But my dad is still there. He's 93, and he's you know, hanging in there, you know, climbing on the roof, and you know, he's great.
He was just waiting for this interview. That's what he's been sticking around for.
Now, well, let's hope that there's more to wait for.
Let's hope.
And so yeah, it's and I went to Central Bucks, CB East.
Yep.
Class of, I'll just be honest, class of 1972. It was interesting. I wanted to be Norman Rockwell. I wanted to be an artist. And I, you know, painted things, drew things, and I wanted to be, but it was like, yeah, sure, Doug, you can draw the poster for the show as long as you play piano, or yeah, you can, you know, be part of this and part of that as long as you play piano. And I was like, well, I guess, you know, cause piano playing and whatever came very easily to me. And so I figured you can't really make a living at that. You got to, you know, you go to work, you don't go to play, you go to work. But then people started paying me, you know, and I started working at the, just out of high school. In fact, I might've still been in high school. I started working at the Bucks County Playhouse conducting Superstar and Godspell and Man of La Mancha and, you know, this sort of stuff like that. And I started making money and I was like, this is crazy. And there was an amusement park, Willow Grove Amusement Park.
Oh, Willow Grove Park. Yeah. That where the mall is now.
Where the mall is now. Right. Down by the interstate, there's a mall. Kind of like in Footloose, right?
Yeah.
Which I eventually conducted on Broadway. But anyway, they had a Wild West show. And I went and saw it, and I went, wow, I want to be one of those. I want to be a stuntman who falls off buildings and gets shot and, you know, jerk harnesses and whatever. So I auditioned, and I said, I'll fall off a building. into, you know, 3 feet of gravel. That was instead of boxes, they just had thick gravel and you splashed in the gravel. And I thought, this would be fun. I'm going to get some really cowboyish pants with studs down the side of the leg. And of course, after a few falls onto the studs of the side of the leg, I had black and blue stud marks up and down my leg. Anyway, there was also a Gay 90s review. And one day the guy just didn't show up or got sick or something. And they went, what are we going to do about the Gay 90s review? We've got something at noon and 2 and 4 and 6. And I said, I'll play it, you know. And instantly I was in the musicians union.
Yay.
All of a sudden I was like a union guy. And I was like, I didn't know this was it. And they said, oh, yeah. And to be a stuntman, you have to be in a variety artists union. And this and all, you know, and then it just started building, you know. I moved to New York. I got cast as the lead in the first revival of Hair on Broadway. I was Burger, and then I was in my Equity card, and then, you know, and then I started singing jingles, and I got my AGVA, my SAG card, and my AFTRA card. And I was like 5 unions before I was, you know.
Yeah, you were at least a triple threat with the stunt thing. Right.
Before you go any further, I got to ask you, did you have to show your junk in Hair? Did you have to get naked?
Boy, did I ever. But, you know, we had a good time. You know, it was a lot of crazy sexuality and stuff going on. But it was also pre-AIDS, you know, so it was cool. We did it. But, there, you know, we'd sometimes tuck ourselves in and then stand there with our legs tight and stuff. And, you know, and the crotch watchers in the front row would be going, what's going on, you know?
He's a eunuch. No.
Tim, I can't wait till you ask Townsend Coleman about his junk.
Yes. Yeah. How many times have you shown your junk, Townsend?
Yeah. Who knows? But yes, well, it was the Biltmore Theater, 900 seats. And it was just a thing. As Burger, sometimes you came out as a policeman.
Okay.
So everybody else was junking, and I was that's what I don't know.
You had to Officer Krupke it up a little bit.
Yes. Right, I'd arrest everybody, and we'd go into the intermission.
So that's great. I'm seeing here you got a lot of theater stuff, and then I guess around the late 70s, early 80s, you started to move into more studio work. I'm seeing basically a who's who of artists. Did you run with a bunch of artists, and is that how it sort of got you into that? Into that world?
You know, it's what happens to many people who find themselves working a lot. It starts with you're pretty good at what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Then you do something like, let's see. It's people you know. You know, a lot of people try to, you know, cold call and try to sub on shows and try to, you know, audition for tours and stuff like that. But really, if you're right place, right time, or right guy, right time. I had a girlfriend at the time whose ex-boyfriend was a member of an iconic 1960s band called the Blues Magoos. His name was Pepe Castro. And Pepe...
That's a Yiddish name, right?
Well, I think his real name was Emil Thielhelm, but he changed it to Pepe Castro.
Okay.
And... he was, they were iconic in the 60s. He adopted me, made me his little piano player. And we went out to Los Angeles and he wrote a little musical. I musical directed it called Zen Boogie. And while we were out there, the guys from Kiss were doing their solo records. And Pepe was from Long Island, you know, friends with them. And Paul Stanley was out particularly doing one thing, and he wanted some strings on a ballad or something. So Pepe called me in to do the synthesizer work on the solo album. And then we did some background vocals, and the engineer from that was impressed with the work I had done and called me to work with the band Live, which is also a Pennsylvania band.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And I did Secret Samadhi with them later, but I'd been called in the other studio was Phil Ramone, mm-hmm. you know, and he heard what I was doing over there and called me to do something else. And then, you know, it was all about the people I had met. And so I did very little hanging with the artists.
Okay.
It was mostly with the producers and the engineers. So I did a lot of work for Phil Ramone. That's where the Rod Stewart songbook.
The songbook ones, songbook yep. First, were, yeah. Were you on all those or just a couple of them?
The first one. I started it off and handed it over.
Okay. You know?
Elton John's Aida. He did Aida as a Broadway show, but before that he did a concept album, and he had, I had done commercials. I was working in commercials as an arranger and orchestrator and, pianist and composer. And, the first Diet Coke spot had
just for the taste of it,
which I wrote, had Elton John and, the dancer from American Idol, who was the
Paula
first
Abdul?
Paula Abdul. Mm. But it wasn't originally written for her. It was originally written for Gladys Knight.
Oh,
and so it was an entirely different arrangement. Then the people got I don't know how to say this exactly, Gladys. I hope you're not listening, but the people went to see her and said, you know, she's a little solid. That's nice for someone who's drinking a diet beverage. We need someone a little, less, less person.
And more dance
Paula. So we went in and redid the drum track and the piano track that had been done did not work along with it. And Elton had already played that one, so I had to go in and fix it a little bit. Mm. So that was the first stunt piano work I did, John. So then we did the next one where it was the Satchmo and the old iconic film actors on.
I remember that.
I think I do too. Yeah.
A different song. I played the recording, the studio recording, and he was going to go in and fix it. He went, nah, it sounds fine. So when he did the Aida thing, apparently he said, I've done this thing and Shania Twain is supposed to sing it. And I wasn't feeling so good when I wrote it. And I don't think I played it very well. And it's not in her key anyway. Who's that guy who keeps playing for me? And so they found me and I went in and replayed the Shania Twain tune in my best Elton John style.
There you go.
And so so that's on. And again, I got, other musicians.
That's awesome.
I get that a lot. It was the same thing happened with the Bon Jovi record. Johnny Bon Jovi was only, 17, 18 years old or something. And he was totally intimidated by the people who were on his record, Aldo Nova, and I think Pepe Kester was also involved in some of the other terrific drummers and bassists and guitarists.
Was this the Blaze of Glory record or the
very first Bon Jovi?
Oh, okay, yeah,
first record. And I went out and sang a couple of scratch vocals to get the high notes out. And I think they left some of my high notes in there, so it was like, you're going to be my, and then you'd hear me go, baby, and then back down, but eventually, of course, Johnny came into his own and,
For that Bon Jovi record, did he not use the classic lineup, Richie Sambora and.
Yeah. He was putting together his band.
Okay.
And they made it onto a lot of it, but they were also session musicians, just making it work.
Did his
background vocalists and stuff, and we were all doing that. So there's other musicians.
Yeah. Did his brother produce that one? I forget.
Cousin, Tony Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
Who was he? I guess semi-owner. Certainly the head honcho at Power Station Studios, which then turned into Avatar, which now is on the market.
I think.
Yeah, so go save your pennies. It's one of the greatest rooms in the country, if not just New York City. Just a great, Power Station A, astonishing. We were in there recording a band, but Pepe and I finally put a band together called Balance. And while we were recording in there, Cyndi Lauper's in another room, and Aerosmith is in another room, and Blondie's and, you know, coming in after us. And it was just, we were all just there at the same time. It was fantastic.
That's pretty cool. Out of curiosity, I just bringing up Tony Bongiovi's name. You didn't happen to work at all on the Star Wars Christmas album, did you? Because I think that was done at Power Station.
It was done at Power Station, and I'm good friends with Maury Esten.
Okay.
Who wrote, What Do You Get a Wookiee for Christmas? the answer of which, of course, is the brush. A couple other things. And I was at some of the sessions, but I don't remember doing any actual work. I don't think I did any work on the record, but we were certainly around at the time.
That's awesome. Cause that is one of that's one of our favorite sort of guilty pleasures is the Star Wars Christmas record. That's really great. That's cool that you were there. I got no more questions about that.
Okay. Then there's another musicians where you're not allowed to take credit for what, but like the Frank Sinatra duets records.
Oh yeah.
Frank Sinatra would sing with the orchestra in Los Angeles and then a track and his vocal track and a 96, track board, a microphone, headphones, Phil Ramone, myself, and an engineer. And then, there Frank be singing, "You Make Me Feel So Young." And then I'd push up my little volume and make me feel there are songs to be sung, bells to be rung, wonderful sing to be, all right, whatever. And I would make up harmonies. And then they would send my harmonies to Charles Aznavour or, Liza Minnelli or whoever, and they would learn the parts that I made up in the studio and so that they wouldn't have to make them up in the studio that they were going to be at. They would just learn the parts from a tape. And as fun as that was, the most fun was being able to say, wait a minute, are we going to play this down just to see if it worked? Let me call my dad. And hold up the phone and say, "Dad, listen to this." And there's me singing a duet with Frank Sinatra, So that was a great moment that doesn't happen to too many people. And again, it's just like other musicians, Doug Katsaris, because they don't want to say I made tell everybody what to sing because they're all fantastic singers, So
did you ever get to meet Old Blue Eyes?
No. I did not.
I love the analogy, musical stunt work. I mean, nothing puts it better than that.
Yeah. Stunt vocal, stunt thing. Yeah, whatever. Same thing with Gloria Estefan, Christmas record. Producer said, you got 35 guys to work with, and we're doing these, hip arrangements of this sort of thing, and you're going to do I'll Be Home for Christmas. And I went and listened to the song, and they were expecting 14 horns and a bunch of strings, and I listened to the record and I'm to the old song, and I went, this is the saddest song anyone ever wrote. I'll Be Home for Christmas, if only in my dreams, and which means you're not coming home for Christmas. It means you're probably going to die over there, wherever you are in the woods, in the war. You're some whack who's going to get whacked. And So I said, well, what reminds people of Christmas? Well, that would be Christmas carols, and kids sing Christmas carols. Mm. So instead of hiring 35, instrumental cats, I hired the American Boy Choir.
Oh.
And they're all singing like the Carol of the Bells and Hark the Herald Angels Sing and little things that make an arrangement of Christmas carols over which very slowly in the top, be home while they're going bing-a-da-bong-bong-ba-da-bong-boo-da-boo-da-boo-da-boo-da, right? And so this over the top goes on. So, it's like I almost thought after I had put the choir down and there was nobody saying I'll be home for Christmas and there was no lead vocal and she was, of course, in Florida, I thought I would never work in the town again. There was just dead silence. I said, maybe when I put the background vocal, the scratch vocal on, you'll know what we're talking about. And then it worked great. So
that's awesome. That is awesome.
Lots of stuff like that. My whole career is made up of insane work that no one else.
So, well, let's get forward. Let's go forward a little bit. Now there's one commercial I got to ask you about.
Okay.
And I think you know the one I'm talking about. The one, the three-note jingle.
The big one?
The big one. By Menon.
Yes. It's actually a little longer than that. And that came in handy when there was the edge of a lawsuit. Someone else had claimed guilt for writing that. I said, how come I didn't get a residual for this thing, for something happening? And then I checked with the BMI, and they went, well, it belongs to someone else. I went, what? And I had to prove that I wrote it. And the truth is, it's longer than the three notes. There's a reason why the by is longer. And now that I have the rights to the song back again, I can tell you. I was holding on to the secret until I needed it.
This is an exclusive for everyone.
But it had a little melody before it that went like 2, 3, 4, bing a ding a ding a ding a ding ding by Menon. So by is in the measure before, and Menon is in the measure after, and there's a little front in the middle of it. 1, 2, 3, by one Menon. Hey. That's why they say by Menon.
So that, your original conception of it, was it about 4 times as long? Is that?
Well, it was like, 3 times as long.
3 times. Okay. All right.
Do, 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 by Menon. Anyway, because that explanation that I could give, that no one else could give, why the by was longer.
Did you know that they were going to use that on Seinfeld as the Costanza?
Oh, yeah, Costanza, and it's the by Menon moment, and it's also in Family Guy, and it's also in, it's been in a couple of shows, and even comics say, I wish I had the job of the guy who wrote by Menon. And I just, I collect a quarter every time somebody says it, so it's fun. They have to ask permission. It's
so do you get some mechanicals every time they replay that episode on Seinfeld?
I do.
Right on.
If I can ask, now it's so well known, but seems like a very tiny piece of work. Did you feel silly at all having to defend it, having to bring out evidence indicating it was you?
Silly? No, not at all. Proud.
obviously proud.
On the back, on all of my bios, it's like, Doug Sayers worked with this, da 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 this, Emmy Award, blah 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 blah. And yes, he's the guy who wrote By Menon.
It's right there on your bio, right at the bottom.
There it is, right on my bio.
Well, that's great. Let's skip ahead. I know we could quite literally talk for days on all your stuff. I mean, basically, my eyes pop out when I look at everything you've done. But
living enough, you do a lot of stuff.
When the main reason we're here is mainly to talk tick. And
a nanosecond of your resume, obviously.
Did I send you the collection?
No. What's this?
Go on.
Wow. Now let me see if I got my computer on. All right. Let's see if I can find this stuff. So you've never heard the hip hop version of a line from every show done. Let's see.
If you got it, we'll listen to it.
The Tick theme movie. No, that's not it. Let me try The Tick. Wait a second. I'm sort of doing my search because I don't know where I keep these things. Over here, The Secret Stash. Okay. So let's do this. Let's see.
Milk mustache! Milk mustache! Milk mustache! Milk mustache!
Fire me, boy!
Can't do plan! Let's get sticky!
You can't fight evil with a macaroni gun!
Tell me, Empathy!
Yes, devil! Back to the oven that made you!
Hey, a book!
He's my revolution, blue monkey!
Monkey? Great team! Smooth! The play!
American made
up.
I am broccoli.
Three, da,
My code name is Nick Tech.
Nick Saltish, Ned Nick Saltish.
You mean like art and education?
Feed your mouse.
Spoon! For a while.
Where's the jerk who calls himself a dick?
I am that jerk.
Yeah. I'm making gravy without the lungs.
Cool.
That is good, baby.
Fireman!
Put it in the happy box.
Oh, very bad. Very bad.
Tell me unacceptable.
Yeah.
Midnight.
Ah! Yeah.
Do you dig?
I am mighty.
Cut on the largest content in the world.
I have a clue you cannot see.
Hi, Arthur.
We're bad.
Cool.
Eat this kitten.
The boots of evil were made for walking.
Got the prize.
Do you catch my drift? I don't know the meaning of the word surrender. But I mean, I know it. I'm not dumb. Just not in this context. You would do battle with the nose of your brother.
Crackerzog.
For a smog.
Crackerzog. Crackerzog.
I watch him a zog.
For Laxinamon. Crackerzog.
Ah, Laxinamon. Laplanderzog. For Yaxinamon.
Crack.
Set sucker frog.
No, no, no.
Susan.
Solid.
Swabbery chum, Naugahyde, gelatin pickled, Mustang milk.
Better than it sounds.
I'm full of tinier men.
Sorry.
Fire me, boy.
So?
Jack Hughes, chum.
Tech.
Ooh, I look cool.
The three, the three now.
23 skidoo.
The three, the three now.
I might be dangerous.
What's going on,
I think?
Sun
height is. Oh, that is brilliant.
That is brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah. Is that available anywhere? Is that like on YouTube?
Yeah, it's on YouTube somewhere, I think. It might be. And then I have 29 tracks from each of the episodes. So the Chairface Chippendale theme and the dinosaur Bob or whatever his name was theme, you know, and they shrink. There's a tiny thousands of tinier men.
I'm filled with tinier men.
And ants, you know, the crazy ants and, you know, everything. The Tick versus the Tick. All of these shows had their own themes. And there was one show that was almost totally sung.
I'm big and blue. No one loves you when you're
whatever. And then they sang Yankee Doodle or something. Well, what happened is that they would.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Bloom episode. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, exactly. The Bloom episode. It's all music. And there's I wrote a couple of songs. I take a bite of the moon for you. I'd carve my initials up there too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do because I take a bite of the moon for you. Anyway, all these background songs which played on the radio while a scene was going on and nobody heard. So they're all in this collection. And what, except for the crazy songs that I would write for the source music, the actors would sing stuff and make it up. They'd just make up stuff, and then they'd hand me the thing, and I would put accompaniments underneath it to make it sound like they had pre-recorded the songs. But, of course, the music came second, underneath. So that was pretty fun.
Steve, go on. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that answers one of the questions that was on my mind is to what extent do those little things stand out for you? Tim and I remember talking years and years ago about that. The mustache feeling, you know, and that whole Waka Chicka Waka Chicka, 70s funk sound. I mean, it's such a left turn for the series. I wondered if that at the time threw you for a loop or if you just really enjoyed doing it, but obviously not based on your experiences.
Yeah, I just don't enjoy doing it. Wait a second. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun.
Hey! You got evil in this town.
Cops, right?
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That goes on. Anyway, so there's, so I have this collection of all the music from the episodes. I'll send it to you.
The dream.
But the thing is, you can't share it with anybody.
No one will no, listen.
You can't make copies of it.
There will be no copies.
Right. But
it will just go into my iPod and that's it.
Sorry. Sorry, Gladys Knight.
Yeah. you're too thick for this music. I'm sorry.
Too much of a
You have this collection. Are the rights still owned by
I own the rights. Here's the thing is that on all the songs I'm singing it's cool, but I use the other actors' voices and we haven't figured out the clarity yet. I'm working on trying to get it released and onto iTunes.
Yes.
And we're working with someone. It's now it's Sony or some crazy thing, Disney. Or I don't know. It went from Fox to Disney to Sony, and I don't know who's got it now. But I have someone working on it.
Oh, that I'm telling you right now. When our fans hear this interview and they even a hint that they can get high quality CD versions of this or digital versions, they're just going to plots.
Right, it'll be low quality MP3.
it'll be in a cheap 1950s microphone from a Walkman.
Right. Exactly.
That's great. I am excited to, I really hope that is released. Cause that is very exciting because those are, as Steve said earlier, 20 years ago when the show was on, Steve and I would talk about all the funny little songs that were in that, and those were some of our favorite aspects of the show.
Right, right. Well, those are me.
Hey, when how did you come to work on the Tick? Did you know what it was, or did someone come to you, or
someone came to me? I had done some work with Neil Adams, the great comic book artist. Right. Well, he did a movie called Nanas about a toy stuffed monkey that somehow saved the world. And it was just him and his kids were in it and the stuffed monkey and a couple of locations and a bad babysitter. And they go all over the downtown area of New York and somehow the stuffed monkey, does it. And I did the music for him and somehow somebody at Sunbow knew Neil Adams and he recommended me and they saw what I had done and they let me do, they had me audition and I passed the audition for the Sergeant Savage. And then so I did the Sergeant Savage sort of theme and some stock music for them. And then for Neil, I did Bucky O'Hare and the Toad Wars.
Yes. Yeah.
And that was Sunbow, I believe as well. And so I did all the music for that. And then the Tick came up, and that was Sunbow, and they asked me if I wanted to, try a couple of themes. And so I wrote, sadly, I don't believe I have them anymore, but I wrote like three different versions of what would be themes, and that would be really interesting, but they just don't exist anymore. But this one went, and Ben liked it, and this was the one that got to the phone call, which turned into me singing instead of bass trombones. And then we recorded it. And then I just started doing every episode. And I used to meet with Ben and his co-writer, a week before, and they would go over and here's a little moment and we want it to sound like this. And they would play me something. And we did that for the first two or three episodes. And then the fourth episode, it was like by phone. And then the fifth episode, nobody called. And then I was on my own.
Okay. You're autonomous by that point.
I was exactly on my own.
Were you, like, as the series went on, because it went on for about 36 episodes, did you ever have anything that you submitted, let's say later on, when after this autonomous period began, that you sent in, they're like, no, that's not going to work. Try something else.
And they never said try something else because the schedule was so tight that they would literally give me something on a Wednesday that was due on Friday.
Okay.
It was just like, here's your film. And I would be, and they wouldn't, it wasn't on a schedule. It was just like, here's your film. We need it Friday. And I would be in Ohio working on an opera or something like that. You know, it's like, just totally different. I'd have to find, oh my God, I got to find a trumpet player. And I got to, what can I do? So one of the episodes I did while I was out there in, that was a specific place I was the ant thing, which has no other instruments except synthesizers.
Mm.
And then there were some other things, but one thing I did that all came out great. They actually, I thought that was my weakest, but that was actually one of their favorites. They love that, you know, synthesizer thing. But there was one thing where it starts in Reno. And so I went, wild, crazy Reno guitars.
Yeah.
And they were looking for, you know, some cool jazz bass, new trumpet, you know, Dark Night Alley, you know, Reno thing. And so that was the only thing of all of the episodes that they said it could have gone a different direction.
I want to say Reno might have been the first.
No, it happened in Reno, but this was way into the middle. This was
okay.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it was around 25.
Evil Dolphin episode, Tim, if I remember right.
Okay. So many Evil Dolphin episodes. I get those all mixed up.
Sorry, well, you can see our fanboy edges showing, you know, on the yes. sides all the time.
You're total Trekkies about this.
So, did you have like a favorite thing on the entire show, like from everything you did on that show, is there one piece that you like stand back and fold your arms and say, yeah, I did that. That's my favorite piece.
Well,
that's your By Menon.
The theme is pretty cool. I like the theme a lot. And I like the first few episodes, I had sort of pre-written what I wanted, because they originally said, we just want a sound library. So give us 10 pieces and we'll use it for all of the episodes. And so I worked really hard on the Chairface Chippendale, which was ba-da-da-da, ba-do-da-do-dow, ba-do-da-do-dow-da, ba-do-da-do-dow. I mean, just some crazy little piece, but that was fun. I was very happy most of the way through. I kept finding new fun things to do. Bye to the Moon, I guess, is my... Yeah. Favorite little, you know, nurbled piece in the middle of it. There is a line from the show that I like the best of all of the lines in the entire series. I've learned when the Christmas tree aliens that dressed like other aliens.
Yes. Yeah.
And he says, we've learned every language in the universe except for Esperanto. We all knew that was going nowhere. That is my favorite line from the entire series of episodes.
My favorite line of the entire series happened in the final episode. It was an episode that Bobcat Goldthwait did a voice on. And I've forever been hoping to use this in real life, where he's like, he says, I'm not a villain. I'm vanilla. But he's Mr. Creamy.
That's the only Goldthwait could have done it.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the show was yanked out from under us with no warning.
Here's the thing. They marketed it so stupidly. Had it been put in a 7:30 time range or something like that at night or on the, you know, something like that. But they had it at, you know, 8 in the morning or something stupid where kids who didn't get it would watch it. The fact that it lasted as long as it did in that insanely stupid time zone when it was totally focused on college age kids, you know, it was just insane. And then it went to Disney kids for a while, you know, the X,
whatever. Yeah, the XD, and Well, yeah. I think for a lot of us, especially those Steve and I's age, we are north of 35-ish.
Right.
We did watch it on Fox Kids, but also when they showed it on, it was either Comedy Central or Cartoon Network, and they did show it in the evening.
Right. Well, exactly. When that's when it was should have been on. I mean, it would have been like The Simpsons. I think it would still be on. You know, they're doing another TV series, I think.
I heard that they're going to kind of retool the live action series from 15 years ago for Amazon, possibly, like as a direct to internet kind of thing.
Well, I'm like you. I think, look, this is not just because I'm me, but I think the whole crazy band thing that followed this, and of course the characters, you know, that we were dealing with, Fledermaus and you know, American Maid, and you know, are these great relationships that have been developed, and they changed the names and they took away the music and they made it sort of like Seinfeld, and it's not what it was. It's the clumsy jumping from the buildings, and it's the breaking things, and you know, and it was sort of calmed down, and I just wish they would ask me. Look, I would virtually, not literally, but I would virtually volunteer my, you know, my music or the theme or something just to help tie it together.
Yeah.
You know, but they didn't have called me, and I'm like, you know, whatever.
You should send the.
This is how petitions are born, right here, yeah. Tim, with these words, Doug.
You should send just a quick email. I think Barry Sonnenfeld is still holds the live action rights. I think he's producing it. So if you know anybody in Barry Sonnenfeld's camp, and just say, hey, listen, I'm out here.
Well, I'm sure I can get a letter out there, but you know, it's like. I want them to ask me.
Yeah. Doug, it sounds like what you're saying, Tim, I think I said this to you as well, is that maybe it should have remained animated. Yeah. You know,
that's not what I'm saying. It should have remained animated, and it should have been placed in a place where the people who would get it and like it, 15 to 25, you know, would get it and like it, not at 6 o'clock and 8 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. You know, when, first of all, if you are up, you're getting ready for school or whatever. So, but it should have remained animated. But that it's a live thing, you know, there might be who knows, someday there'll be a live Simpsons. Who knows? I don't have a problem with that. That they changed it so much that they actually changed the names of characters that you had grown to know and love. Yeah. And rather than introducing new characters, they took old characters and renamed them.
Yeah.
Because they were underestimating even the adult audience they were going after. They wouldn't get Fledermaus. They wouldn't, you know, so we got to make it more Batman resembling.
And they wouldn't catch the pun in American Maid. Yeah.
Well, of course, how can you, you can see my face. I'm speechless. It doesn't make any sense to me. I'm not a TV executive, but were I one, I would have done it different, and maybe something still would be on the air, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Because the concept of what the Tick and who the Tick is and what the Tick represents, you know, somebody who fails upward, you know, like many of us, you know, they find themselves in a crazy position, and yet that goofy guy comes through, the hero at the end, and the world is a better place, even if an entire city has been destroyed. You know, the people who you care about are all happy. You know, clown love bomb.
You know? Proto clown.
Yeah, he's just trying to be nice. You know, and he needs somebody to talk to. You know, the Tick fixes things with diplomacy. I mean, you know who. And the villains, the bad Swedish guys. We don't represent most of the Swedish guys. We're the bad ones, you know? Most Swedish guys would not, you know, rob, you know, so don't blame us. That's heavy.
Yeah. Well, Steve and I, we can tell, for those that are listening to the show, Doug is Doug is on video, and he's very animated, and you can see his love and his passion.
Little thing sticking out of my head. I'm literally animated.
Yeah. So you, Steve, and I can see his passion for this. You can see that Doug is a true blue, pun intended, tick fan after working on this show. So,
I have a giant tick. I have one of those giant tick.
The big action figures.
The big action figure that if you press it at the back, it goes
spoon. Right. I gave one of those to someone in high school, I think, as a Christmas gift because they were on discount at KB Toys. You could get the big tick figure for $5.98, and I bought a few of those. Unfortunately, I don't have one for myself. I just have one tick action figure.
Tim, I'm glad you point this out because, you know, for people who are going to listen to this, and it's such a relief to us. I mean, we don't know going into the interview, Doug. You know, it's work you did long ago. It's one small thing on a huge resume. We don't know if you like are into it, if you recall it fondly, or if it was just a job. Obviously, couldn't be less of the case.
I loved it. I just wanted it to go on forever. It was very creative and a lot of freedom. And I have the board game. I have an extra copy. Let's see. I was, you know, I go to Comic Cons now, and to this, I don't have a booth or anything. I just walk around with my daughter who loves to go to the Comic Cons, and then she blurts out, "My dad wrote the music to the deck." You know,
swarm.
I'm surrounded. You know,
you should honestly, you should look into possibly setting a little table up at some of those conventions, especially if you're able to get the rights and maybe do a small print run of CDs. There's conventions that deal almost exclusively with anime and animated properties.
Oh, sure. You know,
that you would fit into.
Lifestyle. It's all another lifestyle. Yeah. I mean, it'd be fun. It's fun. The little moment and the fact that people start singing stuff back at me and how many times people have tried to write the lyrics down on
dup, you know, dwee, dup, dup, dup,
dup, dwee, dow. You know, dwee, dup, dwee, dow. But a lot of people miss the little subtleties because they don't have the theme all by itself. Mm-hmm. But there's a little scoop, dip, dip, deep, dup, dee, dow in the middle of that. And there's also a dum dee die dee die at the end, which almost no one ever hears because there was an explosion. You know, dup dwee dum dee die dee die. Boom. And I wanted to be really quiet. And so I just had one guy, and I stood about, it was one guy, it was me. I stood about 6 feet away from the microphone and went dum dee die dee die, you know, and shrugged my shoulders and made a cute little face. And then, of course, it went dum dee. It's kind of like the music I write for the Macy's 4th of July fireworks. Mm-hmm. You know, you write a symphony and it comes out, and you can't hear any of it.
As a joke, the last, when you decide to retire and you're going to do that for the last time, you should write all the music for the fireworks on a piccolo and then just submit that.
I should do that.
He's like, "You're never going to work in this town again." I retire.
I actually am never going to work in this town.
You pull out your best John Lovitz. I'm retired.
That's right.
And you know what?
That's it.
Yeah, that's the ticket. I was just thinking about this the other day because they were both on at the same time, bringing up John Lovitz. Is I think of the tick and the critic. Because they're both on at the same time, I hold them both up in such high reverence for different reasons. The Tick is obviously a much more genius show. There's so many layers to it, and then there's The Critic, which I just love for its simplicity and it's basically lowest common denominator. Well, maybe not lowest common denominator. That's not the word, but just very simple, low hanging fruit jokes.
No fan left behind.
Yes.
Right.
So I always put them together, but the Tick is by far the most.
Well, it's just unique. It's unique. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to do a superhero spoof, that's as good as it gets.
And they've tried doing the superhero stuff and the spoofs. I know, like Mystery Men, when that came out, you could see the influence that The Tick, even the comic and the animated series, had on that film. You can see that where they were going with a lot of that. So
look what they got away with. I bet we can get away with. Yeah. Even what's his name, who looks like Spider-Man, the new thing, the movie that's opening up today. You know, that's
Deadpool.
Deadpool. It's sort of mainstream.
Yeah.
And at Marvel, and at the same time, it's also spoofy. You know, like they break the fourth wall all the time.
I guess that came. Deadpool was created. I might be getting the time frame mixed up, but he was created around the time the series came out. So
yeah, after Edlund's comic book work, obviously, but around the time that the series had made it on.
Was it Rob Liefeld? I think
Rob Liefeld. Yeah,
created Deadpool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, well,
nice Valentine's flick.
Yeah, bring your loved one.
Exactly.
Well, I guess we'll kind of wrap this up a little bit. We've been having a fantastic time.
Can I play you something else? Let me play you something else here.
Yeah.
Please.
All right. Just pick, The Tick. Just pick a number from 1 to 30 of episodes, and I'll just play the music that I had for it.
Steve, I'll let you pick that number.
All right. Well, I know what I would want to hear, but it would be random. So I'm going to say number 9.
Number 9, the
number
Beatles.
Number 9.
All right, here we go. Number 9. Here's number 9.
This is sounds like the news.
I think that's the Civic Minded Fox.
Oh.
This is real music, my friend.
Yes.
Okay, one more number.
Yo,
you pick one now.
I'll pick one. I'll say 16.
We're
going to season 2.
Tell me if I'm wrong.
Understands you for the little things you do. When destiny strands you or wears you like a shoe, that's when you know it's over, man. That's when you know it's through. I never thought I'd be so big. And blue.
Beautiful.
Bravo. There you go. So that's that. And now again, he sang that just a cappella by himself in the studio, and then I added the music underneath it to make it sound like, you know, they had worked for months on learning this opera.
And to reiterate Tim's point earlier, listeners won't be able to see this, but Doug was accompanying himself on air guitar earlier on.
Lots
thinking
of
that finally of this. That was the Civic Minded Fives theme, I think, wasn't it?
Carpeted Man.
Carpeted Man. All right, my friends. Well, thank you very much. This was a riot, Tim and Steve.
Let's. Are you? We have your website.
Music of Your Dreams.
Musicofyourdreams.com. Are you on Facebook or Twitter or any of that good stuff?
You know what? I'm not.
No. Okay.
I was on Facebook for a while, and then, you know, I like my friends, but when they start talking politics, I think half of them are jerks. So, and I don't want to think of them as jerks. So I just got off. And, you know, it's going to be at least until the election is over. And then probably after that, because no matter who wins, it's going to be like, you know, half of the people are going to be jerks.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, and I know what it's like. Trust me. I just want to delete everybody that talks politics on Facebook. Why can't we just talk about cats flushing toilets and how long the line was at Starbucks? Real problems.
You know,
first world problems, please.
The words are no one has ever, the things that no one has said is, oh, because of your political post on Facebook, I've changed my view. These are things that no one has ever said. Yeah. No one ever.
It's right, an echo chamber for sure.
Well,
right, exactly.
Well, Doug, I hope to see you at a convention one day, sitting at a table,
or walking down the street in Pennsylvania somewhere.
Well, yeah, that could happen. We'll keep our eyes open. You're very unique looking.
This is not real.
No,
this is not real. Actually, this is real. I cut, as you see by all of the pictures on my website, my hair is a foot longer.
Yeah,
but I cut my hair because, you know, I'm an old man. I cut my hair, and my beard is this color. But I just had to play a rock and roll show, and every time I do that, I color in a little hair, like, you know, just for men. I put the little mustache and the little fun thing. But that was, you know, a few days ago. So now it's all growing back, and I'll take it off. And now I'll look like a cute little old, you know, professor. Yeah.
I want to ask you one last question. I see you work with Bob Kulick. Did you ever run ever play with Shel Benner out of Quakertown? He used to play with Quiet Riot after Rudy Sarzo left.
No, I didn't. Sorry. Okay. Sorry,
yeah, I was just I noticed.
Well, I'm still in touch with Bob.
I'm sorry?
I'm still in touch with Bob.
Oh, yeah. I just noticed Bob Kulick. I know that he and Shel Benner used to be in a band called Skull.
Skull, like, right.
Shel Benner, I almost took bass lessons from him because he's from Quakertown, and I almost took bass lessons from him, but he went to do Skull. His mom used to be a swim instructor at the YMCA. So anyway, I just wanted to see if you
I don't know, Shel. No, sorry.
No, okay. Well, all right. Hey.
But I'll say hi to Bob for you.
Right on. He doesn't know who I am, but say hello anyway. Thank you. Thank you so much. And and as I said, we'll let you know when this goes up, and hopefully we'll get some good reactions. And since you're on Facebook, I'll hopefully send you an email with some of the comments.
Okay, great. But excellent.
All right.
All the fans.
All right. Thank you, Doug, so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. We'll talk to you later.